Final case is the U.S. versus Munson. When you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. It's good to see you again, Judge Shedd, Judge Davis, Judge Diaz. My name is Tom Vanderblumen, and I'm here on behalf of two parties, really, in sort of an odd hybrid. I was appointed to represent James Munson. James Munson was an owner of the property that's at issue in this civil forfeiture case, and I was also asked to serve as amicus supporting his mother's position and was court-assigned to handle that task. So I know you have a lot of papers and lots of different colors, but I will try as best I can to synthesize the arguments that I think are the most crucial for today's proceedings. As the court knows, this is a civil forfeiture action, and it is a little different than some that may come to the court because it concerns a property that's not even in this circuit. The property is located in San Diego, and the reason that it got brought into a proceeding in this circuit is that there was a criminal prosecution in the Western District of North Carolina in Charlotte. And there is no dispute that the property that was located in San Diego was used for drug trafficking purposes. And for our purposes today, we acknowledge that.
Mr. Munson has not been allowed to present his claim. Is that correct?
That's correct, Judge Shedd.
Is his claim derivative of his mother's claim, or does he have a separate independent claim to the property?
It's a separate claim, Judge Shedd.
It's a separate factual basis for his claim? Or does he rely on his mother's BFP status or innocent owner status?
He does not rely on her BFP status, but he does rely. The one argument that they share in common is the argument that it was not necessary for either of them to satisfy the provisions of 18 U.S.C. 983 D3 because Ms. Munson was an innocent owner under subsection D2.
The reason I ask this is, her claims were to fail,
yes, sir,
would he have any independent claim?
If her claim under D2 were to fail, he would have any claim. But she may also have a claim under D3.
Right.
And I'm using these sort of code
words. That's what
words.
I said, if her claims were to fail, claims, because she claims both, doesn't she?
That's right.
I'm not trying to have you dance around this with me. I didn't know if he had some claim, because I don't think I know from the record what the transaction was from her to him the first instance.
That's correct.
I didn't know if maybe he paid her $200,000 for the property. I didn't know any of that.
No, sir. Okay. The only reason I hesitated is that there is a separate procedural issue about whether Jim or James received proper notice of the forfeiture proceedings.
I understand.
That might void the forfeiture as to his interest. There is no such claim as to Ann Munson's.
Right.
There's no
but
notice
I, no,
issue.
But see, I was looking at it the other way. Whether or not it appears to me that maybe he should be allowed to present a claim, but I'm wondering if it might be mooted by the determination of this panel in the right disposition or certain disposition of the case.
I was prepared for that point because I think you're right. As a practical matter, if the court were to determine that the argument about innocent ownership as to subsection D2 is not a valid argument, then I don't think it matters that he was not permitted to file a claim. However, he may still, for separate reasons, be able to argue that the forfeiture of his interest is void for lack of proper notice.
Gotcha.
Because there are different reasons for that, much like we enforce the Fourth Amendment, search and seizure and suppress.
And that would be, but it would it just reinstitute the process against him as to his interest in the
not
process?
Necessarily. I mean, it would depend on the statute's limitations and whether the government.
Oh, you think that maybe if he didn't get notice, I mean, if he wasn't allowed to intervene or file a claim at the time within the statute of limitations and notice period after he's actually got notice, in other words, if the court below was wrong about that maybe the remedy would be he would keep his interest in the property and there would be no further hearing on it?
That could be the remedy.
Okay. Okay.
Simply because in the same way that you have a criminal defendant whose Fourth Amendment rights are violated, even though we know he's guilty, that's the whole reason it's up on appeal.
But you also have something called inevitable discovery.
That's true.
When there's a mistake and you just go back and say, let's follow the procedures or whatever, but we're going to get to the same point.
But we may not.
Okay.
And that would
okay.
be a remedy for the district court to address and whether the government wanted to spend the resources on that.
Okay. I'll let you go with your
Yes, sir. I don't think it's necessary for me to go through the factual predicates because the factual predicates are undisputed and fairly
right.
simple.
My understanding is that she divested herself of any and all interest in this property, and I seem to have found in the record indication that he did reimburse her. Maybe he didn't pay her fair market value, I guess, but he reimbursed her for some of her costs at the time of the grant out from her to him, right?
I don't think that there's any dispute about those types
right.
of issues.
So she's out of the picture.
Not necessarily.
She's not out of the picture at that moment.
Well, let me break it down this way if
okay.
I can. There is no dispute that in 1997 to about 1999, she was the sole owner of the property.
Right.
And there's also no dispute she had no idea that any of this illegal activity
right.
was going on.
Well, that's not going to the question he asked.
And
right?
I'm getting there. This does feed back into my argument. So if I have not answered your question, I will make sure that I have. I'll come back around.
I'll ask it again.
Fair enough. At that point, she does divest her interest to Jim.
For value.
In 1999. Okay?
Right? I mean, she did get some reimbursement or whatever you want to call it, right?
But at that time.
It wasn't
time,
just a gift from her to him.
Well, what I want to make sure that we're clear on is that just because I'm saying that the property was divested doesn't mean that they lose their right to rely on her innocent owner status when she transferred
it. I understand that's a separate legal issue,
yes,
but as a factual matter,
right.
she is out of the picture.
Well, no, sir.
And if nothing else happened, if he remained on title by himself mm-hmm. thereafter, your argument is that she still can come back?
Not if he was the only one on title. She
exactly. So the point is, at that moment, she has no right whatsoever.
At that moment, but
at that moment,
now she does.
So now the question becomes: what is the legal effect after he's been arrested and charged and et cetera? And she knows all that. What a legal effect of his gift back to her of an interest in the property?
But I think that question and those issues go to the question of whether she can satisfy subsection D3, the after acquired interest and the bona fide purchaser for value and all those.
Well, that's the only thing it considers. It doesn't have anything to do with D2.
Well, here's where I would disagree
okay,
with you.
Okay, where do you disagree?
And this is the nutshell of the case.
Right.
The what I say there. Versus what he says.
Okay.
And he's a good guy. He's a government servant doing a good job. Well, he's done a good job in his brief.
Sure, they appreciate that.
But I disagree with him because it could lead to some really screwy results.
Well, now, okay. If that's your argument, the results it could lead to, then...
Well, no,
you're no longer talking about this case.
Not necessarily. I'm talking about a question of statutory interpretation, and you don't interpret a statute so that it could lead to inequitable results. If there's a much more reasonable interpretation that can protect other weird things from happening, and here's the situation, and I don't think that, and I wouldn't concede that the result here is equitable. I mean, I think the result here is inequitable.
I would just jump right to your argument.
But here's
instead
the argument.
Describing it to us,
yeah.
Jump to it.
If as long as someone is owning the property and they are satisfying the subsection D2, they are an innocent owner while the criminal activity is occurring, and then that criminal activity stops, as long as they didn't know anything about it, they are then free to divest their interest to anybody they want to, and that taker of the property, that purchaser, takes free and clear of any claim by the government. Because
even if he's the drug dealer?
And let me illustrate this with some hypotheticals. We've had a lot of hypotheticals today in the prior cases.
But the answer to your question, his question would be, even if he's a drug dealer, you would say yes.
Yes. Yes. Because.
So the guy whose behavior results in the forfeiture in the first place, who could never be an innocent anything, can take the property from an owner without knowledge, and then give it back to her after she acquires knowledge. Go ahead. I'm not going to interrupt you again.
No, these are all very important questions because I want to make sure the court understands the argument.
Okay.
And let me illustrate this with a hypothetical.
I understand the argument. I don't understand the legal or equitable basis for the argument.
Well,
I understand you said it could lead to some weird results, and I can think of all kinds of weird scenarios, but we're deciding this case.
Well, let me walk it through with some hypotheticals. It may help us slice the onion a little bit to figure out where I think the issue we come down to. Let's say that Ann Munson had never divested her property at all.
But that's counterfactual. That's not this case. I'm struggling with this case. She's totally divested.
If you'll let me do the hypothetical, I don't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Are you saying we shouldn't read innocent owner that way, because if you read it that way and look at what he knows when he takes it, that it might cause an innocent person in his situation to be negatively affected?
That's definitely a possibility. If she had never divested her property interest and the government had tried to do the forfeiture proceeding against her and said, we want to take your interest because because the house was involved in drug activity and therefore it is putatively subject to forfeiture, And she came back and said, no, 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 no. I've owned the property the entire time, and therefore under subsection D2, I am an innocent owner. She wins.
She wins, okay.
Doesn't she then have clear title to pass it to whomever she wants to?
Sure.
Well, then why?
And she could give it to the drug dealer.
Exactly.
Only that's not this case.
But
well, I don't understand why. Go ahead.
That depends, though, simply on the timing of when the government elects
to
bring
it. Of course it does. Your birthday depends on timing. Mm-hmm. Everything depends on timing.
But you're.
I don't understand how we can interpret the statute. Go ahead.
Well, consider another hypothetical. And I appreciate that you're trying to draw me back to the facts of this case. And I don't think that the facts of this case are somehow that the right result was reached here, but it could be wrong in other cases. I think the wrong result was reached here, and I'm trying to use other cases to show you why. Take, for example, one of the things that I think is a real challenge about subsection D2 and its requirement that you either not know anything about it or actively report what happened. Let's consider a hypothetical where I go and
say this much. It's a very odd situation for the advocate to be proposing hypothetical questions.
It
goes the other way.
That's right.
Usually the lawyer's arguing on the fact. We're beating the lawyer about the head with hypotheticals, but it seems to me it's a very odd situation. That it seems to me you could make the argument straight away about the statute or about something else without so many hypotheticals.
Well, the argument is what it is, that the argument is what it is, that as long as there is an innocent owner who meets all the criteria of subsection D2. She either didn't know about it or did all that she was required to do to inform police and stop the activity from occurring, that when that activity stops, she owns the property free and clear from any claim from the government and can divest it to whomever she wants to. Because if you don't have that rule, what you run into is a situation where what happens if she found out about the illegal activity happening at the property?
Why would it make some sense in making the statute to make sense? Look at who takes it from her in that circumstance.
Well, because it depends on a number of arbitrary factors.
Does the statute preclude that?
You're trying to give
us a hypothetical where an innocent second party gets it from an innocent first party. But I'm saying, does when you look at the statute on forfeiture overall, does it not allow us to look at it and make it make some sense by saying you do look at the status of the second taker?
Only if the first taker can't meet the status the provisions of D2.
But why is that?
Well, I'll tell you.
You just think it's just absolute under the statute.
It is for the very reason I just mentioned. It is sort of a chain of title argument that the title in that first owner, in that D2 owner, is clean. It's unencumbered. And if she's really an owner and has a right in property, then one of those rights is to alienate that property to whomever she wants.
But what about? I'm just wondering. Property law. Is there no sort of argument about fraud and somebody taking the property and they aren't protected on their ownership as the grantee because of some fraud or knowledge?
I'm sure on some facts that if the government wanted to make that argument, it could. But
in other words, so you say that it's not 100% assured that the innocent owner is automatically necessarily passed to the first grantee?
Well, I think that there could be some circumstances where you could show that there was collusion or there was some sort of activity that was going on, but you know, remember that one of the provisions of D2, and this may help illustrate my point, one of the provisions of D2 says that you either don't know about the criminal activity or you do everything you can to stop it from occurring.
You think your strongest argument is D2 or D3?
D2.
Okay.
With respect to who?
Well, I only have a D2 argument with respect to Mr. Munson. I do believe that Ms. Munson has a very solid D3 argument for all the reasons we've stated in the brief, but because the appeal turn so much on the D2 argument, I want to make sure we're clear on it, and I understand the court. I'm hearing the court's concern about the argument.
Seems like your rule would apply only in familial circumstances.
Which rule?
The rule that an innocent owner, who's an innocent owner in title at the time the illegal activity ceases, is forever an innocent owner, or to be treated as if she's one. In other words, One of the points of the statute, it seems to me, is to essentially charge landlords with a duty to police their property, and most landlords do.
But here,
right?
Here's the
problem. The only situation where a guy could, apparently this was a sizable drug operation from everything that we can see, and it's only when mom turns over a property to a son. Or a son turns over a property to mom, however, In other words, landlords generally police their property. They have agents, or they go themselves, they check things out, they find out what's going on, and the statute seems to contemplate that. But here we had a situation where, like any of our mothers would, if they were able to, essentially turn the property over to us. And there's sort of a assumption of the risk kind of thing going on here.
Here's the problem, though, okay. I think, with strictly construing it that way as opposed to the way that I'm offering it.
Okay.
Let's say you find out about you're the owner, the innocent owner, and you find out about the criminal activity at the property. What do you do?
You call the DEA.
Okay, let's say you do call the DEA, and the DEA does a raid, and everybody in town knows about it. Then it's hard to find a D3 purchaser to pick that property up, because all of them will know the property is subject to forfeiture.
But it's not. Because you just assured that it's not going to be forfeited, because you called the DEA.
Right, but that's the point, because then you've got that owner, that current owner is satisfying D2, and therefore the property is not subject to forfeiture.
Right.
But under the government's interpretation, it would be, because the second the purchaser of that property, the
no,
second
I'm,
person...
No, I'm not talking about a purchaser. In other words,
or a donee, whomever, they're going to know about the activity. I'm saying that you had asked earlier, and my time is, I've hit red, but I'll finish this question, sit down. You had said it seems constrained just to family type situations, and I don't think it is, because you can have a situation, and I think about it, landlords on college campuses is a good example, where they rent a piece of property and something really bad happens.
In your argument that under D3, it's also the requirement they didn't reasonably know that it was subject to forfeiture.
Correct.
D3 requires a lack of knowledge of the possible forfeiture of that property.
That's correct.
And you claim that if you make a big deal about it, if it becomes known, then the owner of the property is shooting himself in the foot.
Absolutely. And the government would have every interest to make that happen, because who's the only person in the market for that property at that point?
I don't understand why in my scenario we care about D3. It's a D2 situation.
But I think you're making my argument for me, Judge Davis. I think you're saying that at that point, she is a D2 owner and therefore has clean title and can pass it to whomever she wants to.
Absolutely.
There we go.
But that's not this case. She sold it to her son, who was the drug dealer.
But I think you're just distinguishing. I mean, the criminal activity had already ended, and therefore she was free and clear because she didn't know. And if she had known, the part about her not knowing is the part that applies. And so I think that once she satisfies that and the criminal activity stops and she continues owning it, it's hers. She can do whatever she wants to do with it.
And what if the criminal activity resumes? I mean, where do you go with that? How many stop starts can there be?
I mean, that's a question you'd have to have. But
I mean he makes enough money to selling drugs to buy a nicer place, and he rents it out. But he continues to deal drugs from his new place. Has the criminal activity stopped?
Well, I think... I'm assuming the facts are here on summary judgment, as we have, that the criminal activity had stopped, and I don't think there's any dispute.
Well, now you want to be factual. You don't want to be counterfactual.
Well, I don't disagree with that you're using an illustration, but I think we're working toward the same goal.
No, I appreciate your efforts to answer my questions, and I hope you appreciate my effort to wrap my head around your argument.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bradford.
I'm no big fan of forfeitures, that's for sure.
May it please the court, we've outlined four issues in our brief, and I'd like to spend my time initially and probably for the most part on what we've identified as the third issue, whether Ann Munson, where the district court found Ann Munson could not be a bona fide purchaser for value under D3 as a matter of law.
But that's not what he spent his time on. We'll talk about that. What about under D2? And the ability to pass a property on under D2. What about that possibility?
Well, I've got several answers to that argument. And
the
first one would be there's no authority whatsoever. He hasn't cited any case that has ever held that.
We announcing that rule for the first time.
That would be a completely novel rule.
Has anybody announced the contrary rule?
Over and over and over again. In civil forfeiture, you have to look at the burdens of proof of the parties and the way statute allocates those burdens. And the government has a burden of proving a substantial connection.
Let's cut to the chase on this. Is it the government's position that a person who takes from an innocent owner D2 has good title or doesn't have good title?
They take it subject to forfeiture.
Well, I see your claim is subject to the forfeiture is always on the property.
If the government has the ability to come in at any time and prove that drug trafficking activity took place at the property.
So that the innocent owner, the D2, only covers you for your lifetime, your lifetime?
It covers you while you own the property.
Yeah,
when you divest yourself of the property, you can't raise that argument anymore.
If you own it, it only covers you as long as you own the property.
That's correct.
As long as you live. Either grant it, give it away, or die. That you, nobody's ever protected from that status or derivative of that status again.
That's right. And because the owner has divested himself or herself of the property, then they no longer have an interest in the, and we've cited a number of cases in our brief.
If they left it in the will to a child who had nothing to do with drugs, your position would be the same.
Or intestate succession.
Right.
However, a subsequent person acquires the property, they have to be a bona fide purchaser of value without notice. Or
what about the estate of a innocent owner?
The estate normally stands in the shoes of the owner.
Okay. What about an heir?
If the heir is a bona fide purchaser for value.
No, he's not a purchaser. He's an heir. But he's not a drug dealing heir. He's just an heir.
If
he's the good sheep of the family.
Right, right.
I have to look at any hypothetical just going through the grid, the formula in the statute.
Okay.
And if he's a bona fide purchaser value, clearly, if he takes without notice under a will, I think he
probably
has good title.
Probably has good title.
But I have to do the analysis just going through the statute literally every time.
Wait a second. But that doesn't make sense. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. So if she had deeded it to her good child a second before she died, that person would not get good title. But if she left it through the will, that person would get good title.
If it's a subsequently acquired interest after the drug activity.
That's correct.
And a person takes it without notice.
They're not a BFP.
That's the D3 analysis.
That's not a bona fide purchaser. This is just a donee. What I'm trying to figure out is, you have to answer that question for me. In your view, would the grant, I talk in terms of grant, I'm talking about property deed. The deed of property would not be protected in that innocent, good third person?
I think it would be, but I can't really tell you how as I sit here.
Well, that's the question we have, because the other side points out if that happens, then it's not based on, it shouldn't, then why didn't the statute let you look at the knowledge of the receiving person? Their theory is a good title in the mother allows her to do what she wants to with it. And a person who takes, is not a BFP, but whoever takes, you could be a BFP if she sells it to somebody, but just a gift by way of will or a gift by way of just giving it while she's alive, if that passes on good title, then you, where in the statute do you look to the knowledge of the person who takes the property?
Well, clearly under D3 you would. Under D2.
You can't go there, D2.
Under D2, I don't. D2 is confined to pre-existing interests. Interests that took place before the person acquired title. And I don't think a person who acquired title in any fashion after the drug trafficking activity took place can assert an interest under D2, under the plain language of the statute. And that's the way the case law interprets it.
I thought you just said an heir does take under D2.
No, I think they take an interest in the property in terms of...
Under D2.
I don't think D2 is even implicated at that point. You just, under normal principles of property law...
We're not asking you if a person can get property under a will. We know that answer. We're asking what's the legal impact of the status when that person receives, what interest are they receiving? Are they receiving full, clear title of that property as an heir? Or are they receiving something subject to forfeiture?
I think their interest would be protected as long as they don't have notice or reasonable test. But I'm not sure.
Where are you getting that from? Is that just how you feel about it? Is that in the statute somewhere?
I don't think that a person in that position, their interest would be defeated. I can't tell you as I sit here how that analysis would play out. I'd have to sit down.
Is the answer in the timing of the forfeiture action? This is a civil action. Can we look there for the answer?
Do
we care about the state of title at the time the forfeiture is filed?
Exactly. The clause we've cited says that the owner, definition of owner in the statute, is the owner as of the time the civil case is brought.
So and if so, the heir is the owner at the time the civil forfeiture action is brought, then we look at the status of the heir. Is that right?
That's correct. The claimant is the way it would play out in the forfeiture case. The claimant's interest is determined as of the time the civil case is filed. Now the government's
and so if she had died and left this property to her drug dealing son, then he might well win then, correct?
Well, he can't be an innocent owner because he's not without notice.
But can he take derivatively of an innocent owner?
He cannot.
By testamentary disposition.
He cannot because
why not?
He has an after acquired interest in the property, and that can only be analyzed under D3. It can't be analyzed under D2. That's the way the statute is structured. You don't do a D2 analysis for a pre-existing interest in the property.
Well, what would the statute say about an heir with knowledge, but an heir is not a bona fide purchaser? The statute uses the term bona fide purchaser. That statute doesn't even seem to contemplate intestate succession or testamentary disposition.
That does not seem to be the case in that section of the statute.
So how do we treat an heir under D3?
I'm not sure.
I suggest that we look to D2.
And I don't think D2 applies, but I think there's another way to get there. I just can't tell you what it is right now.
Okay.
Isn't the relevant time period the time of the illegal conduct, not the date of the action?
That's the date when the government's interest in the property vests. Right. Under the relation back doctrine, our interest vests at the first time the criminal activity occurs.
And that's when you determine these competing property interests, don't you?
That's correct.
Okay.
You have to look at the interests of any claimant under D2 or D3.
And I understand the concern about wills, but perhaps the concern about requiring a bona fide purchaser is to prevent sham transfers for no value.
Exactly.
But that doesn't really address the issue of an heir, I guess.
Well, let me ask you, in light of Judge Diaz's question, you say the government's interest vests when?
At the moment, that's the relation back doctrine in the statute.
So when the drug dealing is taking place?
Right. That's
regardless of who may know about it.
Subject to the government then bringing a forfeiture action.
Subject to defenses to people.
Any defense that could be raised under D, either 2 or 3.
So a mom who learns of the case, learns of the drug deal, learns of the illegal activity, after the charges are made known, but not before, she is an innocent owner.
Under D2.
Under D2. Can she then sell the property? Or does she have to wait and litigate everything with the government? Well, I guess it's a matter of whether you believe her.
She can sell the property. The question is, would the buyer take as a BFP? And if the buyer is really a BFP, takes without notice, like we don't have Liz Pennons recorded or they don't have...
Well, wait, notice of what?
Of the criminal allegations.
Okay, maybe I'm getting a better idea of what the other argument is. So if the indictment comes down and mom genuinely learns for the first time that for the last 2 years, son or daughter has been selling drugs out of the property. Now you say the government's interest vests 2 years ago,
That's right?
Now you file the civil forfeiture a month after the indictment is handed up. So everybody now knows that for 3 years, son and or daughter have been selling drugs out of the property.
Well, son.
Okay, son. All right. Now, what can mom do with that property at that moment? What is her interest?
She already divested herself.
No. I'm going to one of the hypotheticals. Okay. She's still entitled.
Well, she has to wait until the criminal case is resolved.
Why does she have to wait?
Because Section 853K bars all other parties from intervening in a criminal case until the criminal case is resolved.
But this is civil. You don't have a criminal forfeiture here. You haven't filed a civil forfeiture action. So what can she do with the property? before you file the civil forfeiture action.
But she has notice.
She has notice post-indictment, not pre-indictment.
And the activity is stopped.
And the activity is stopped.
And the question is, in that scenario, can she sell the property?
The question is, what can she do with the property?
She can sell the property if she has a BFP. The BFP...
Can she give it away?
Sure.
Free of the government's interest, which vested back 2 years ago.
No, she can deed it to anybody. She can try to give it away, but whether not a buyer or any other grantee can take it depends on whether they satisfy D3.
That doesn't make any sense.
It's a straightforward reading of the statute.
So she's got to own this property until she dies?
Well,
that can't be right.
What you normally do in that situation, what we see happen all the time, is the owner of the property enters into settlement discussions with us and we settle it out.
They pay you something.
But there's
we
nothing,
settle it out.
There's nothing to settle. She didn't know.
If she didn't know and had a pre-existing interest and she still owns the property,
yeah,
then she satisfies D2.
Right. And so my question is, she's in a coma. She's in a coma for the entire period that the drug dealing is going on. She's in title by herself. The indictment comes down on Tuesday. On Friday, she wakes up from the coma and learns for the first time that her son has been dealing drugs out of the property. All right? So there's no question she had no knowledge before the indictment that the property was subject to forfeiture. What can she do with the property the following Monday?
She can sell it to a BFP if she can find one.
Why does it have to be a BFP?
Because that's what the statute requires.
Well, maybe 3A actually requires that the person selling the property not be an innocent seller, in this case for value, because it doesn't make sense, as Justice Davis says. If, in fact, she was an innocent owner of the property, why should she be limited? The facts don't change simply because she then transfers the property to someone else.
I think you have to look at the intent of Congress and the statute, and it's the intent of Congress is to prevent drug dealers from conveying property to family
mom
members.
Mom wasn't a drug dealer.
And then as long as she holds on to her interest in the property, she has an ownership interest that's protected. If she sells it, then she divests herself of that interest. She no longer has it. That's the point you were making on counsel's argument. So she no longer has the interest if she conveys it, she's no longer an owner at that point in time.
So you see it as, you see D2 providing not good title in the property, but a lifetime estate.
It's an affirmative defense. She's got to...
But she wins that, she only gets an affirmative defense. I mean, she only gets a lifetime interest, doesn't she? Because if she is... You don't think that clears up her title to deed it to somebody else, do you?
If she satisfies D2 and that's adjudicated, then she's got good title. But these things have
good
to be...
Good title to do what with?
Convey the property. She's won. She's filed a claim in a civil forfeiture case. She's prevailed because she satisfies D2. She can sell the property.
And that's your point. She's got to win.
She has to win.
She has to win.
It has to be adjudicated. We file a civil case, then the burdens of proof kick in, and this all happens in due course.
And she better wait until you file that civil case.
If we've got a Liz Pendens recorded on the property, she'll have to wait.
Well, if you've got a Liz Pendens, why didn't you just criminally forfeit it?
Well, I can answer the case why we didn't do a criminal forfeiture. Because the agents came to me after James Munson's sentencing hearing and said James Munson's mother testified at the sentencing hearing that it was his house. We better try to go get it.
I'm sorry, are you the criminal? Are you the prosecutor?
No, I'm not the prosecutor.
Oh, you're the civil lawyer here.
I'm the civil AUSA handling the forfeiture. But I didn't prosecute the criminal case, and with 20/20 hindsight, we should have forfeited the house in the criminal case.
But now, wait one second. What is to be determined in the claim process, in your opinion?
Well, the government's initial burden is to show substantial connection.
I'm talking about for her, as an innocent property owner, D2, what is to be established, that she is innocent?
She has to prove she's a current owner of the property.
She is.
And
I'm just saying,
variation, she might not be, but if she's a current owner of the property,
what else?
And she has to prove that she... under D2, did not know of the activity while it was going on, and there's other...
Do y'all assert that she did in this case?
No, we...
Just wait one second. So in this case, she... I don't know if there was an adjudication of what there was, but she meets all the requirements you say she has to meet to have that property free and clear.
She's innocent, but she's not an owner. Under D2 or D3.
At this point, she...
At the point we filed our case.
So the timing matters when she establishes that right? Because if she'd established that she was an owner and innocent, then what could she do with the property?
Well, if she hadn't conveyed it to James...
No, right.
If she'd have done, she could have sold it.
To anybody free and clear.
Who's a BFP. She couldn't sell it to one of James' buddies who was also a drug dealer who knew what was going on and came in and bought it. But she could sell it to a BFP.
Then what good does it take going through all that process? I mean, that just protects her in her life while she owns it, while she's alive?
It protects her until the civil forfeiture case is adjudicated, and then it's over.
It's over, and she gets what? She's protected to own it herself as long as she lives, but she can't do anything with the property?
No. Once the civil forfeiture case is adjudicated,
she wins,
we're out of the picture.
But then the notice goes away on the notice under the D3. Is that it? Because you've already...
Once that's all adjudicated, you know, that doesn't stay on the property forever.
So that it's not anything to stay on the property. You don't have to have a list pendants. It just says notice of it. But that would go away because the issue has already been litigated? Is that how you...
Right. Once it's been adjudicated, then the property is conveyed to somebody free and clear, depending on who wins.
It would be to her? It would be...
Well, if the court rules that she has satisfied D2, then she has good title of the property. She can sell to whoever she wants.
So it's not deeded to her then, is it? She has it.
No, the court just rules in her favor, enters an order.
I was correcting what you said. You said the winner is deeded to the winner. It wouldn't be deeded to her. She would.
I didn't mean that the property was deeded. I meant that she would...
Well, that's what you, but her, you said.
Yeah, I said that wrong. That her...
You understand?
Her interest...
You understand why I thought you meant
deeded,
because you said is deeded to her.
Her interest in the property would be preserved and protected, and the government's interest would be dismissed.
Under
D2.
D3, did not know and was reasonably without cause to believe the property was subject to forfeiture. That would go away by virtue of the proceeding having been cleared of.
That's correct.
Because it's no longer subject to. That's been adjudicated, and it's no longer subject to.
That's
so
right.
That the BFP could take it for value at arm's length after the proceeding.
That's correct. And that happens all the time.
And so, and you see it as the D2, that is just really, you do see that as limited, and it's nothing that's derivative from there. That protects you while you own it until it's burden of proof's met or whatever. But you can't use that innocent owner, D2, to then transfer your protected right to another person.
I don't think any case has ever said you can transfer innocent ownership.
Has any case said that you couldn't?
I don't think the argument's been raised. That's why I called it a novel theory. I've never seen that litigated.
But when you keep saying to us, no case has ever decided that, well, no case has ever decided otherwise.
But there's a lot of cases that say you cannot assert a former ownership interest, and we've cited those in our brief, and that's what they're doing. They're asserting Ann's interest. I've got 36 seconds.
Why does he not have a right under the BFP interest?
That's what I think is the heart of this case, and...
You got 35 seconds.
The heart of my argument is there was no arm's length transaction. They were related parties. She was trying to help him by refinancing the loan.
You know, that BFP says at the time that person acquired an interest in the property, my understanding, that would be the time at which she received a deed giving her some interest.
That's correct.
Right?
That's the time we're looking at.
And it said, was a bona fide purchaser or seller for value. Was any value given at that point?
No, there was no money paid. She did sign the note and deed of trust for the refinancing transaction, but that was not...
Go ahead, say that. Isn't that after you get the interest in the property? You can't sign a deed of trust over a piece of property till you own the piece of property.
Well, that's true, but it was done all at one time.
But I'm just wondering about that.
Yeah.
What that says is, at the time the person acquired the interest, don't you acquire... What normally happens in a transaction is... Somebody deeds you a piece of property, you sign a mortgage, and you get that money. Well, you sign a mortgage to get that money, you pass that money to the person in exchange for the deed. So, in other words, you've given value. You signed a mortgage and all to get the cash, but you've passed cash to the seller at the time you get your interest. In other words, you don't get your deed until he gets his money.
I'm just wondering
how the transaction happened here, because if she signed the deed, if the deed was signed to her and she acquired an interest, which she then was allowed, in other words, it's not a purchase money mortgage. It's just a mortgage on a piece of property. There's an argument that she acquired an interest in that property before she gave any value for the property.
It's not when she gave the value. It's when she had knowledge or reason to know of the drug trafficking.
You're exactly wrong. It says at the time the person acquired the interest in the property was a bona fide purchaser for value.
What did she know at that time? That's the issue. The inquiry the court has to make is at the time she acquired the interest, it's not what she did with the money, what she knew.
You're absolutely wrong.
That's the statutory language. That's the cases we've cited, Judge. I'll stand by the...
You're wrong to cite because they have nothing to do with what I'm asking you.
I'm
not asking you anything about it. It didn't say anything about innocent owner. You may have that argument, too. I'm looking at a statute at D3, and it says it means a person who, at the time that person acquired the interest in the property, was a bona fide purchaser for value. She doesn't assert that she gave money to get that interest from her son, does she?
No, she didn't anything.
She says she went on a mortgage for that property. I'm leaving the innocent ownership completely out of it. My point is, I'm not sure she qualifies as a BFP because I don't see how she got her she acquired an interest in that property before she gave any value.
Oh, I would agree with that, Your Honor. That's
my
argument.
Point.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you're saying.
It has nothing to do with notice. It has nothing to do with notice. I mean, you have to acquire what to have that defense. Forget the notice and all that. You first have to be a person who acquired an interest in the property, and at the time you acquired it, you were a bona fide purchaser for value. I'm just saying,
didn't give any value at that time.
That's my point.
I agree with you.
She fails there. Those other cases you were talking to me about, that didn't have anything to do with that very specific slice of that definition.
Right.
You see what I mean?
I agree.
Is that in the record, how that deal worked out?
I've got a timeline in my brief that summarizes the record that I think...
But did she, in fact, get her deeded interest in that property back from her son before they... I mean, even if it was just a half a second or
I believe the deed and the deed of trust are in the joint appendix.
Okay. All right. You have anything else? Thank you very much.
If I'm reading my time, I believe is out, but it looks like there's 35
minutes
on there.
35 seconds passed. 35 seconds passed. Okay, Mr. Plan moving.
A few points, Your Honors.
Did I move in your direction during his argument?
Yes, thankfully so.
Okay.
If you moved at all, it was in his direction.
You're going to help us understand how she wins here.
Yes.
Okay.
Because what that whole illustration, that whole discussion with my good colleague, Mr. Bradford, illustrated is that it's all arbitrary. It all depends on when the government decides to bring its forfeiture case. As we assume, the criminal conduct ends and she is still an owner, and the government says, aha, we've just found out about it, and we're going to go in and we're going to seize that property and we're going to do a civil forfeiture on that property. She comes back and asserts her D2 interest, and she wins. And just like Mr. Bradford said, if she wins in that proceeding, she is free and clear, and she can give it to whomever she wants to, including James. It doesn't matter that he's a drug dealer because she's got free and clear title having gone through the procedure. So why should it matter that the government gets to decide when it's going to bring that procedure? Because in the interim, she's sitting there with a property that she's an innocent owner of but can't really own.
Have some kind of estoppel or latches argument or something like that to claim that they were unnecessarily delaying it for that purpose?
It may very well be, but think about it. She would have already divested her property. So it's really the next person who's going to be making that argument. It's that, so to speak, he wants to put them in a D3 box, and I'm saying they're taking as an assignee of a D2 owner. And remember, the term owner is defined not just as including assignees, and it's just like the Justice Kennedy comments in the Buena Vista opinion, and his was a dissent, but that was a plurality opinion with lots of things going on. But his point was that a donee or whomever stands in the shoes. As an assignee, they stand in the shoes of the person that was before them. So they can assert just the same rights that the person had before them.
If we accept that rationale, though, you're reading D3 right out of the statute.
Not necessarily. You only need D3 when you don't have that D2 owner, and that's most of the cases. I mean, there was a discussion about how the government says we've cited case after case. I have not found a case that is on all fours reading this statute rejecting the argument that we're making.
It would lead to this result. The drug dealing son, without telling his mama why, would go to his mama and say, sell the property as fast as you can. Sell it. Take less than, take within reason, because it has to be arm's length, but sell it.
But she's still innocent.
I don't know.
It's her property.
But no, the question is, but it's protecting the next person.
That's correct.
It's protecting her. I mean, that's a race to sell the property is a way that would be interpreted.
Right, but it is what it is doing, it is protecting one of her, you know, we talk about in law school the bundle of rights you have in property, and one of them is
that,
the right
I know
to
that, but you have to put the statute on top of it, and you the way you would read it or have us read it, it would then benefit the child who's doing wrong to, without telling the mother why, just go say, "Mama, sell your property."
Well, that may be a collateral consequence of the rule I'm talking about, but that it also protects anyone else who might just incidentally find out that mama's son got arrested, and hey, I'll take that property off your hands. Well, sorry, I can't sell it to you because now you know about it. Sorry. And to Judge Diaz's point, D3 is still there. I'm not reading it out of the statute, but it's intended more for the situation where you don't have a D2 owner. When the drug dealer owns the house and tries to give it to mama to hide it, that's when you get D3. And of course, if it's a gift, then it's a question of whether it's a donee and whether the donee meets the certain requirements that are limited and not a BFP. But that's when D3 applies. D3 has a purpose. And I do want to come back. We've talked a lot about the drug dealing son, and we have to remember too that the drug dealing son was convicted and punished and has served his time. So we have to take, you know, all those punishment types of things out of the equation here. We're talking about civil forfeiture under the statute and what makes the most sense.
There is a statute of limitations for this, right?
There is.
What is it?
Mr. Bradford and I were having that discussion in the hallway, and I would.
Your answer is.
I would defer to Mr. Bradford because he knows more
what
about civil
forfeiture. What would Mr. Bradford say? 5 years. So the government can't wait 10 years.
No, but that's the point, is that then she's sitting there in a five-year limbo period waiting. And what if she wants to sell it? She had to wait for 5 years.
Oh, you mean after she acquires knowledge of the government's interest?
Well,
I mean,
no, not even
she
that.
Could, she could file a quiet title action or declaratory
why should
judgment.
Why should she have to if she's an owner?
Oh, because she had the bad judgment or bad luck to permit her son to sell drugs out of her property.
I would just say, in closing,
if I ask you this much, if you think she's a bona fide purchaser?
Yes, sir.
And why is that?
I understand your observation about the timing of the deed.
Is that factual in this case?
Is she a purchaser?
She gave value, yes.
What did she give?
She gave her good name to be on the mortgage.
When did she sign that mortgage? After she received the property.
I would have to check the specific facts. Well, my understanding, it was all part of the same transaction.
Yeah, but it wasn't a purchase money mortgage, was it? Because she didn't. There was no money to change hands, was there?
Money came out of the loan, and the money was given to James.
No. I said that money changed hands between the seller and the buyer.
But I'm
mom and son.
I understand. Right. I'm not sure that's required, though, to give value. I mean, remember, he's sitting there saying, I can't make my mortgage payments because I got arrested, and the house is going to go into foreclosure. And she says, well, you know, why don't I buy the house or have a half interest in the house
but
for
I
you by giving
about
my
that,
credit?
But it seems to me, I don't know if it's true or not under these facts, but it seems to me that at the time she acquired the interest, I don't know how you have to have the property before you can mortgage it. You know, when you buy a property and it's a purchase money mortgage, mm-hmm. that is actually the legalism that you get the money and use that money to buy the property. So that mortgage is something that you look at because you have to have that in place to get the money. The money's what you give. That's the value that you give when you buy a house.
I understand, but I think you have to look at the transaction as a whole, and the whole reason that she was put back on the title was to do the mortgage, to get the refinancing.
But if you say that, then what did she receive? Then what did she for expectations or whatever BFP, expectation of value, what was that? That she would owe money?
And get half an interest in the property.
With knowledge.
Well, I disagree with that for the reasons stated in the brief.
How could she not have knowledge when he comes to her and says, I need money to pay a lawyer because I've been indicted?
That doesn't mean the property was used for crimes. That just means that he's been arrested.
But doesn't she knows it's subject to forfeiture?
Necessarily.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Appreciate this morning. By the way, we note that you are court appointed. You sort of said the odd way that you're here with us through those procedures. But we thank you very much for what you've done. We all acknowledge that for us to do our jobs, we have to have people who are court appointed to come up and do their jobs. You've done a great job for your client, I think. Okay. We'll adjourn court and step down and greet counsel.